Let's talk about how we are going to get into the chasm on the Dandera River, Nicholas suggested. Sapper and I have talked about nothing else the whole time that you've been away. That, and catching fish, I'll warrant, she grinned at him, and he looked guilty. Well, both subjects involve water. That's my justification. His expression became serious. You recall that we discussed the idea of exploring the depths of Taita's pool with scuba gear, and I explained the difficulties. I remember, she agreed, you said the pressure into the underwater opening was too great, and that we would have to find another method of getting in there. Correct, Nicholas smiled mysteriously. Well, Sapper here has already earned the exorbitant fee that I have promised him. Promised, I emphasize, not yet paid. He's come up with the alternative method. Now she, too, became serious and unfolded her legs. She placed both feet on the floor and leaned forward attentively, with her elbows on her knees and her chin cupped in her hands. It must have been all those brains of his that pushed out his hair. I mean, it's very neat thinking, although it was staring us both in the face, actually. Neither you nor I thought of it. Stop it, Nicky, she told him ominously. You're doing it again. I'm going to give you a clue. He ignored the warning and went on teasing her blithely. Sometimes the old ways are the best. That's the clue. If you're so clever, how come you aren't famous? She began, and then broke off as the solution occurred to her. The old ways? Oh, you mean the same way as Taita did it? The same way he reached the bottom of the pool without the benefit of diving equipment? By George, I think she's got it. Nicholas put on a convincing Rex Harrison imitation. A dam! Royanne clapped her hands. You propose to re-dam the river at the same place where Taita built his dam 4,000 years ago? She's got it! Nicholas laughed. No flies on our girl. Show her your drawings, Sapper. Sapper Webb made no attempt to disguise his self-satisfaction as he went to the board that stood against the facing wall. Rayanne had noticed it, but had paid no attention to it. Until now he pulled away the cover and proudly displayed the illustrations that were pegged to it. She recognized immediately the enlargements of the photographs that Nicholas had taken at the putative site of Taita's dam on the Dandera River, and others that had taken in the ancient quarry that Tumri had shown them. These had been liberally adorned with calculations and lines in thick black marker pen. The Major has provided me with estimates of the dimensions of the riverbed at this point, and he's also calculated the height that we will have to raise the wall to induce a flow down the former course. I have, of course, allowed for errors in these calculations. Even if these errors are in the region of 30%, I believe that the project is still feasible with the very limited equipment we will have available to us. If the ancient Egyptians could do it, it'll be a breeze for you, Sapper. Kind of you to say so, Major, but breeze is not the word I'd have chosen. He turned to the drawings pegged beside the photographs on the board, and Royan saw that they were plans and elevations of the project based upon the photographs of Nicholas's estimates. There are a number of different methods of dam construction, but these days most of them presuppose the availability of reinforced concrete and heavy earth-moving equipment. I understand that we will not have the benefit of these modern aids. Remember Taita, Nicholas exhorted him. He did it without bulldozers. On the other hand, the Egyptians probably had unlimited numbers of slaves at their disposal. Slaves, I can promise you, or the modern equivalent thereof. Unlimited numbers? Well, perhaps not. The more labour you can provide, the sooner I can divert the flow of the river for you. We agree that this has to be done before the onset of the rainy season. We have 2 months at the most, Nicholas dropped his flippant attitude. As regards the provision of labour, I will be relying on enlisting the aid of the monastic community of St. Frumentius. I am still working out a sound theological reason that might convince them to take part in the building of the dam. I don't think they will fall for the idea that we have discovered the site of the Holy Sepulchre in Ethiopia, and not in Jerusalem. You find me the labour, and I'll build your dam, Sapper grunted. As you said earlier, the old ways are the best. It's almost certain that the ancients would have used a system of gabions and coffer dams to lay the foundations of the original dam. Sorry, Royan interrupted. Gabions? I don't have an engineering degree, I'm afraid. I'm the one who must apologize. Sapper made a clumsy attempt at chivalry. "Let me show you my drawings." He turned to the board. What this fellow Taita probably did was to weave huge bamboo baskets, which he placed in the river and filled with rock and stone. "These are what we call gabions." He indicated the plans on the board. After that, he would have used rough-cut timber to build circular walls between the gabions, the coffer dams, that is. These he would also have filled with stone and earth. "I get the general idea," Rayan said, sounding dubious. "But then it is not really necessary for me to understand all the details." "Right you up," Sapper agreed heartily. "Although the Major assures me that there is all the timber we'll need on the site, I plan to use wire mesh for the construction of the gabions and human labour for the filling of the mesh nets with stone and aggregate." "Wire mesh?" Royan demanded. "Where do you hope to find that in the Abbe Valley?" Sapper began to reply, but Nicholas forestalled him. "I'll come to that in a moment. Let Sapper finish his lecture. Don't spoil his fun. Tell Rohan about the stone from the quarry. She'll enjoy that. Although I've designed the dam as a temporary structure, we have to make certain that it's capable of holding back the river long enough to enable the members of our team to enter the underwater tunnel in the downstream pool safely." "We call it Taita's Pool," Nicholas told him, and Sapper nodded. "We have to make sure that the dam does not burst while people are in there. You can imagine the consequences should that happen." He was silent for a moment, while he let them dwell upon the possibility. Rayan shuddered slightly and hugged her own arms. "Not very pleasant," Nicholas agreed. "So you plan to use the blocks?" he prompted Sapper. "That's right. I've studied the photographs taken in the quarry. I've picked out over 150 granite blocks lying there, completed or almost completed, and I calculate that if we use these in combination with the steel mesh gabions and the timber coffer walls, this would give us a firm foundation for the main dam wall." "Those blocks must weigh many tons each," Rayan pointed out. "How will you move them?" Then, as Sapper opened his mouth to explain, she changed her mind. "No, no, no, don't tell me. If you say it's possible, I'll take your word for it." "It's possible," Sapper assured her. "Taita did it," Nicholas said. "We will be doing it all his way. That should please you. After all, he is a relative of yours."
"You know, you're right. In a strange sort of way, it does give me pleasure." She smiled at him. "I think it's a good omen. When does all this happen?"
"It's happening already," Nicholas told her. "Sapper and I have already ordered all the stores and equipment that we'll be taking with us. Even the mesh for the gabions has been pre-cut to size by a small engineering firm near here. Thanks to the recession, they had machines standing idle. I've been down there at their workshop every day, supervising the cutting and packing," Sapper buttered in. "Half the equipment is already on its way. The rest of it will follow before the weekend." "Sapper's leaving this afternoon to take charge and get it all loaded. You and I have some last-minute arrangements to see to, and then we will follow him at the end of the week. You must remember I was not expecting you back from Cairo so soon," Nicholas said. "If I had known, I could have arranged for us all to fly down to Valletta together."
"Valletta?" Royan looked mystified. "As in Malta? I thought we were going to Ethiopia."
"Malta is where Yanni Badenhorst has his base."
"Yanni who?"
"Badenhorst. Africair."
"Now you really have lost me."
"Africair is an air transport company that owns one old ex-RAF Hercules, flown by Yanni and his son Fred. They use Malta as their base. It's a stable and pragmatic little country. No African politics, no corruption. And yet it is the door to most of the destinations in the Middle East and in the northern half of Africa, where Yanni and Fred do most of their work. His main employment is smuggling booze into the Islamic countries, where, of course, it's prohibited. He's the Al Capone of the Mediterranean. Bootlegging is big business in that part of the world. But he does take on other work. Duraed and I flew into Libya from there with Yanni on our little jaunt to the Tibesti Massif. Yanni will be taking us down to the Abbe."
"Nicky, I don't want to be a killjoy, but you and I are now undesirable immigrants to Ethiopia. Had you overlooked that little fact?" How do you propose to get back in there?
Through the back door, Nicholas grinned. And my old pal McNamara is the gatekeeper.
You've been in contact with Mac?
With Tessé. It seems that she is now his go-between. I imagine it's very convenient for Mac to have her on board. She has all the right connections, and she can slip in and out of Khartoum or Addis or places where it might be awkward or even dangerous for him to be seen.
Well, well, Ryan looked impressed. You have been busy.
Not all of us can afford a holiday in Cairo whenever the fancy takes us, he told her tartly.
One more little question.
She ignored the jibe, although she realized that despite his easy smile, her absence must have irked him.
Does Mac know about the Taita's game?
Not in detail, Nicholas shook his head, but he has some suspicions, and anyway I know I can rely on him. He hesitated and then went on. Tessé was very cagey when I spoke to her on the phone, but it seems that there's been some sort of attack on St. Frumentius Monastery. Charlie Hora and 30 or 40 of his monks were massacred, and most of the sacred relics from the church were stolen.
Oh, dear God, no. Rohan looked stricken. Who would do such a thing?
Same people who murdered Duryod and made 3 attempts to wipe you out.
Pegasus?
Von Schiller, he agreed.
Then we are directly responsible, Rohan whispered. We led them to the monastery. The Polaroids they captured from us when they raided our camp would have shown them the stele and the tomb of Thanos. Von Schiller wouldn't have to be a clairvoyant to guess where we had taken them. Now there is more blood on our hands.
Hell, Ryan, how can you take responsibility for Von Schiller's madness? I'm not going to let you punish yourself for that.
Nicholas's tone was sharp and angry. We started this whole thing.
I don't agree with that. But I admit that Von Schiller is the one who must have cleaned out the muckdust of St. Frumentius, and that the stele and the coffin are now almost certainly part of his collection.
Oh, Nicky, I feel so guilty. I never realized what a danger we were to those simple, devout Christians.
Do you want to call the whole thing off? He asked cruelly.
She thought about it seriously for a while and then shook her head. No. Perhaps when we go back we will be able to compensate the monks for their losses with what we find in the bottom of Taita's pool.
I hope so, he agreed fervently. I do hope so. The giant Hercules C Mark I 4-engine turboprop aircraft was painted a dusty, nondescript brown, and the identification lettering on the fuselage was faded and indistinct. There was no Afric Air legend displayed anywhere on the machine, and it had a tired and scruffy appearance that spoke eloquently of the fact that it was almost 40 years old, and had flown well over 500,000 hours, even before it had fallen into Yanni Badenhorst's hands.
"Does that thing still fly?" Rohan asked as she looked at it standing forlornly in a back corner of the Valletta airfield. Its drooping belly gave it the air of a sad old streetwalker, who had been put out of business by an unexpected and unlooked-for pregnancy.
"Yanni keeps it looking that way deliberately," Nicholas assured her. "The places that he flies to, it's best not to draw envious eyes."
"He certainly succeeds.
But both Yanni and Fred are first-rate aero-engineers. Between them they keep Big Dolly perfect under her engine cowlings."
"Big Dolly?"
"Dolly Parton. Yanni's an avid fan."